The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1115. It is Wednesday, the 11th of July, 2018. On the podcast today, oh, don't forget, by the way, download the free Vox Markets app. voxmarkets.co.uk/app. Just follow a company you're interested in and you'll be sent news to the front screen of your smartphone within seconds of the company releasing it via notification free of charge. And you can set up many watch lists, or portfolio watches. So voxmarkets.co.uk/app. Okay. Andrew Knott, CEO of Savannah Petroleum, SAVP, on the podcast today discusses the successful result of the Cunama 1 exploration well, the third consecutive discovery they've made in Southeast Asia. Plus, I have John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about vanadium, talking about copper, and also talking about two companies related to that, which is Bushveld Minerals, BMN, and Ark Minerals, ARCM. And also, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andrew Knott, CEO of Savannah Petroleum. SAVP is the ticker. Andrew, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, more good news. We'll get into the Cunama oil discovery in a bit. Before we do, Andrew, for people listening right now who are not familiar with the story or are new to the podcast, can you explain or summarise what Savannah Petroleum is all about, please?
Yeah, so Savannah is an oil and gas company. We're listed on AIM. We have a good shareholder base, a strong financial backer, some of the largest institutions in the world behind us. We have a large exploration project, which we've had a lot of success on and we expect to have a lot more success on in Niger. And then in Nigeria, we are acquiring interest in two large producing oil and gas fields and a stake in an infrastructure business. So the combined business combines cash flows with an exploration asset, which is increasing in value all the time.
Yeah. This drill campaign, it seems to me like it's been very successful. I know oil and gas is very risky. I know in that area there are other companies that have had a high, you know, success rate, strike rate. But take us through what's happened so far, and then take us into this news and explain what you've achieved so far, if you could, Andrew.
Okay, so we acquired our position in Niger, where we have about 50% of the main petroleum basin under license in two tranches over the course of the last 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. The basin itself is a large basin. It's 30,000 square kilometers, which is about 1.5 times the size of Wales. Yeah. Our half of it is about 14,000 square kilometers in terms of size. We have we benefit in the basin from a very large existing data set, so technically we understand it very well, we believe. And the success rate in the basin over in the modern era is 75%, as in 3 out of 4 wells have resulted in the discovery of an oil field. We, because of the data set, because of the scale of the project, we spent several years understanding that, acquiring seismic, acquiring other geological data. Then we've now commenced the exploration campaign in Niger. We started off with the Bushaya well. That was a light oil discovery. We followed that up with the Amdi well, which is a fantastic light oil discovery. And then we followed that up to this morning with Cunama. And I think what we've proven with the drilling campaign is, firstly, that the prize here is good quality oil fields with good quality crude. Secondly, that it's repeatable, i.e., the work that we've done, we clearly understand the geology, we clearly understand what works and what doesn't work, and that therefore we have a very repeatable opportunity set here which should continue to add reserves and resource over the coming years. For example, we have a total of 126 mapped, undrilled exploration targets. So there's a lot more than just the initial three to go after. And the third thing that I think is really important is, from a company perspective, these three discoveries move us from an exploration project to an exploration project with a development edge. And that development edge means that we should be in a position where we can start generating cash flows in this project sooner rather than later. That is obviously very positive for our business, but also when we're having discussions about introducing a potential partner to the project, clearly the value equation has changed very materially over the course of the last 4 or 5 months. So from our perspective, it's very, very positive. We announced this morning that we're going to drill a fourth well, Eridale-1, which is close to the second discovery, Amdi. So it's difficult to see how it could have gone better, really.
Yeah. And so say, when is this, next campaign, the drilling campaign?
So the next, we'll finish drilling operations, certainly within the next week or so. It will then take, say, 10 days to move the rig, and then we'll then commence drilling activities on the Eridale well. So we should get news for over the course of the next 4 or 5 or 6 weeks of salt on Eridale. And then we have additional options that we can exercise if we so choose as well. So, there's a lot going on in the Niger project just now.
Absolutely. Like I said, it seems to be going very well. I mean, you do as much preparation as you can, of course, before you start drilling, because that's when the money goes in. But, right now, is this exceeding your personal expectations?
I think, to have 3 out of 3 discoveries is clearly very good. And everybody in our company is very, very excited about what's happened. And I think we don't want to get too carried away. The main focus now is to make sure that we're generating cash flow from this, from these fields sooner rather than later. And to do that, we're looking at an early production system. We've hired good people to help us with that. So we already had a good team, but we're strengthening it all the time. I think the quality of the team is clearly demonstrated by our performance when we have done our operations. Everything we've done is coming quicker than expected, from seismic, from FTG to drilling the wells. And I think to be able to consistently beat your budget is a very good skill to have. And I think it's relatively unique in our industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it must help as well. The oil price is looking quite nice, a good few at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah. So the Niger project is obviously high quality crude oil, which benefits directly from the oil from a higher oil price. So it's obviously very encouraging for us. We're to be long a large resource based asset such as we have in an environment like this. Mm-hmm. I think it's very attractive to a lot of people, this asset.
Okay, good stuff. Andrew, well, listen, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of what you're doing, the progress you're making, but are not following the story yet, give them those 3 quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, so look, I think the 3 key things are very straightforward. Firstly, we from Nigeria, we expect to generate significant cash flows. In Niger, we expect to add significant new reserves at very low cost. And thirdly, we have very much have an aligned management team to stakeholders. So in terms of cash flows, the assets that we're acquiring in Nigeria produce cash flow today. They're largely post-investment, so clearly they're going to be highly cash flow generative. In Niger, the finding cost in the basin has historically been less than $1 per barrel, and the net present value per barrel, depending on your oil price, is between $6 and $8 a barrel in today's prices. And clearly there's a sustainability and a repeatability about that model. And then thirdly, we have an aligned management team. The management team that we have have invested millions of dollars of their own money in this business, which I think clearly demonstrates their belief in what we're doing, but also aligns us very nicely with shareholders. So those would be the 3 reasons I would give you in terms of why it's worthwhile doing a little bit of work and thinking about Savannah.
Marvellous stuff. And like I say, you're very busy, so no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yes, good form, thank you.
I love that, good form, lovely. Of course, big game tonight. You watching it, John?
Yes, I'll be doing that. We haven't had a lot of time for watching the football recently because the mining sector has been a busy place, but I wouldn't want to miss tonight's game.
Yeah, I assume you're one of those guys we see, you know, on the videos on social media, bare-topped, standing on an ambulance somewhere, drunk, singing, "It's Coming Home." Are you one of those guys, John?
Well, it's always possible. It's always possible.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, let's get on to some stuff here. I was looking at, you were talking about vanadium, the price, and you said you almost did a double take of the price of vanadium. It seems to be still going up, doesn't it, at an alarming rate?
Yes, as you say, an absolute double take, because the price had, we thought the price had peaked in the first quarter, and then the price came off a little bit in the second quarter, and we thought, oh well, it maybe it'll drift towards the end of the year, and we've always taken a somewhat conservative view that the price had this run up, and like many commodities having run up, it would then drift lower as more production perhaps came out and the market settled. But no, the price has just taken off again, and we're up to $80 a kilo for ferrovanadium in the European market, and in fact that's leading the Chinese market, which is at 77.5. So I am gobsmacked by how high these prices are, and that's incredibly good news for Bushveld Minerals, who get very handsomely paid for every kilo of ferrovanadium they produce.
Yeah, well, do you know what? Every time you announce Bushveld, it doesn't, you know, it sticks a little bit with me, because of course I did hold them, but way before they did a 10-bagger on me, I just lost patience. I remember someone saying to me, "Oh, these don't go anywhere, these shares," when I had them. And I thought, really? And they didn't move for months, and I just lost a bit of patience, sold out, and of course, as you do, when I sold out, they just went crazy a couple months later. So. Did my brain in that. So, but I'm looking, you know, for other exposure to vanadium in a smaller cap space, because I like tiny cap, I like micro caps, but there doesn't seem to be very few opportunities about, you know.
There are some foreign exploration companies and project companies where there is vanadium that used to be considered to be a byproduct in those projects. They're generally polymetallic projects. And the vanadium was never talked about. The vanadium element and component of those projects now looks as if it's has the major value, and so there are some companies talking about these things, but they are not UK listed in general. And the fact is that Bushveld is able to double and treble its production going forwards at about a third of the cost of anything that anyone else can really do in the exploration game. So they've got such a big head start because they have large vanadium resources, they've got relatively high grades, and they have a vanadium processing plant and all the technology and know-how in place, which is so important in this business. It's not rocket science, it's not overly complicated, but there is some chemistry involved, and there's not a huge knowledge base in the world of how to produce it, and the byproduct production that used to come out of stone coal production and titanomagnetite production from blast furnaces, it has fallen away in China because of their green shield policies and environmental restrictions, and so you've restricted the production of vanadium at a time when actually demand is increasing, and demand is increasing because of stricter standards for rebar in China, and I think they're catching up with the Americans and the Europeans on that, and also the new vanadium redox batteries that are coming through.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. So essentially saying there's no smaller cap alternative at the moment. I mean, I know one, but I'm not convinced. I've not done enough research on it. It's called Aura, AURA. Now, I have to do some more research on that, but, you know, maybe someone could do some research for me and let me know. But
We looked at Aura. We like the people. They have a good project in Sweden. But, of course, it's a project, and the vanadium component has come through, and that's all very interesting. And I like Aura as a company, but I'm still a bit undecided as to whether that's really going to be a vanadium producer.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. All right, so what else are you looking at? Any other companies, John?
ARC Minerals.
Yep.
They are drilling in Zambia as we speak. I'm going to go and see them next week. I think that's very exciting because this project has a small copper mine on it. It has a known copper resource on it, although that's non-JORC. It won't take them very long at all to drill this up, prove a bigger resource, prove, I think, the potential for there to be hopefully something much larger on that license. And I'm pretty excited about this because the last project that looked like this was something owned by Colin Bird, and he sold it to First Quantum Minerals for just under $170 million. So this has a long way to go, and ARC Minerals this morning announced that they had increased their direct holding in the project to 66%. They've got another convertible for about 5%. So their effective stake is just over 71% in something that I think is going to fly.
Yeah. I thought Colin sold it for more than that. Unless I look at the wrong multiple there.
Oh, possibly. Maybe it was 270.
Yeah, no, yeah, I think it was 260 or 270. Yeah. Something like, yes, I think it was. Yeah, but I don't know why. Maybe I'm wrong there. I don't know.
Forgive me for losing $100 million there.
Exactly. What's that between friends, Johnny? Okay, and I just want to mention, I remember you saying about the copper market. What's happened is come off a little bit, the price, but it still seems very bullish long. I'm seeing positive stories every day on copper long term, you know. But when I say bullish, I mean obviously the price going up because the grade isn't there going forward and the demand is going up. What's your thoughts, John?
Well, there's a lot going on in the world at the moment. Donald Trump is shaking up the global tariff situation. The Chinese and actually the Europeans have been taking the mickey out of the free trade situation for years and years and years. Trump is redressing that balance. He is, and I think what he's doing is correct because you can't have this imbalance going on for so long. But one of the things that's come out is the copper price has been bashed severely. I think traders in the United States tell me that it's unwinding of funds that were long, margin calls, things like that. I also think there's some Chinese funds who've been deliberately bashing the price down. And we've seen a sustained fall of about $1,000 a ton, which is a big old fall for the copper price over the last month. And this doesn't normally happen. It's not a natural move. And this isn't because there's a little bit more copper production in the world and because it might be a little less demand. This is either forecasting that we're going to have a complete global meltdown, which I just don't think we're going to have, or that somebody's really manipulating the price, which I think is much more likely to be the case. And it maybe it's the China Chaos Fund or something like that. And I think it's a way of having a go back at Donald Trump, is my personal opinion, because I like a good conspiracy theory now and again. And actually, I think all this tariff stuff is good for inflation. That's going to upset a few consumers because things will get more expensive. And there's a good piece in the FT from John Authors about the impact of higher tariffs directly affecting inflation. But it's a good way to bring jobs back to the United States. And I think actually, this will be good for the UK because there are suggestions that the UK could have a free trade agreement with the United States. And that would be good for us too. And at the end of the day, I don't think the world is going to consume much less copper or much less of many other metals because there's so much growth. And I think a lot of that growth is going to be led by the United States going forwards with cash going back into the States caused by recent Trump tax changes. At a time when they finish their QE, that their economy is going great guns, and there's a lot happening there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So, but I don't understand. But surely, I don't know what that. I haven't read that FT article. But surely, the trade tariffs aren't a good thing generally for everyone, are they, or for anyone?
Well, given that we've been in a deflationary environment for about 5 years now, and we're just coming out of that. And policymakers are looking to raise interest rates again and all that sort of thing. It's going to be difficult, I think, for some countries and possibly for China. But China's got the cash and the resources to weather a lot of this unless it heads into another Asian crisis, which is always possible, but not really in my thinking at the moment. The fact is the United States is so strong, and they are the world's biggest consumers of many things.
Especially burgers.
Well, yes, exactly. The Americans have an amazing capacity to consume everything in great quantities. So whilst America is so strong, I'm less worried about the rest of the world.
Yeah, okay. Marvellous stuff, John. Thanks for that. And hopefully we'll speak next week.
Look forward to it, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At five, Asia Met Resources, ARS. At four, PCG Entertainment, PCGE, by the way. Hopefully, I'm going to have the main man on very soon of Asia Met. That's Tony the Manini, hopefully. Very soon. I said very soon. It's not after this bit, but it's soon. Four, PCG Entertainment. At three, STX Energy. That's STX. At two, Rehobold Resources. That's RBD. And number one, most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours is UKOG. All right. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, I just spoke to Andrew, Savannah Petroleum, Cunama Oil Discovery, drilling rig option exercised. At four, Rehobold Resources, RBD independent evaluation results. At three, ARC Minerals, who John Mayer talked about, start of drilling and increase of Zam's ownership. At two, Anglo-African Oil and Gas, rig mobilization for multi-horizon well. And number one, Talao Energy, entitlement offer closes. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.